Life is a journey, right? And some people journey more than others. And I've been on a journey. I've been on a journey actually to make my way across Canada. I was actually born in Newfoundland. That explains a lot. Okay, it gives me permission to fail in a lot of ways here before you start. I'm a Newfie. But I don't remember my days in Newfoundland. Everything I remember was Ottawa. My father moved to Ottawa early on in my life, and that's where I was raised. And then, as I mentioned, I went to seminary in the Midwest, U.S. Midwest of Dallas, and then moved back to Western Ontario to Guelph, and was in a church there, and then planted the church. And then finally in 2000, I moved out here to Vancouver. And so it's been a journey. And I've been, as was mentioned, in the Lower Mainland now, coming up 25 years this summer. And my wife and I were just saying last week, it just dawned on us, we've now lived here longer than we have lived in any other place in our journey in life. So our daughters are here, our grandkids are here, and I think we'll stay. Yeah. I think it's kind of where home is at this point in time. But today also marks the start of a journey for us, for that we're going to take together. I'm kind of excited that it's starting on the first Sunday of Lent. I'm evangelical enough that I haven't figured out what you do with common time, but I'm passionate about Advent and Christmas, and I'm passionate about Lent and Easter, and I think I'll get to the point where I'm passionate when I understand a little bit more about common time, but that's where I am in the process. And so this is the beginning of a journey, and beginning of a journey at a great stage. So I'm looking forward to that. And along the way, as we try and get to know each other, I'm sure we'll probably share a drink or two. Now, it's Christian community, I understand that. So, you know, coffee, tea, maybe even water, I don't know. But we'll probably be the ones of first go-to and first choice, right? But, you know, we are people who are passionate about our coffee. I mean, there are outliers, and some of you are saying, I don't like coffee. Okay, yeah, there are outliers. But for the most part, people we're passionate about our coffee. And people around the world drink coffee. In fact, people around the world, you know, people around the world drink more coffee, not just Tim's, but the people around the world drink more coffee than any other drink other than water itself. To the tune of 400 billion cups a year. 400 billion cups of coffee worldwide every year. Pretty substantial, you know. In Canada, more coffee is drunk than tap water. We drink more coffee than water. Not saying that's healthy, just saying that's reality, folks. And the U.S. imports coffee. It's good to talk about this during tariff time. The U.S. imports coffee more than any other commodity other than oil. And with the tariffs, maybe coffee will surpass oil. I don't know, because I've heard of tariffs on oil, but not the coffee. So that may change things, but they actually do. And Americans drink 5 million tons of coffee every year. And it supports a $19 million industry, a billion-dollar industry, a $19 billion industry. Now, remember that Canada is 10% of the population of the U.S., so it's not an... But our percentage is much higher than the U.S. because in Canada, it's a $6.2 billion industry, employing 170,000 people in Canada, the coffee industry. We're kind of passionate about our coffee, right? Canadians actually own more single cup systems, K-Rug and Nespresso and stuff. We actually own in Canada more single cup systems than is owned in America. And that's because Americans pay for more coffee out. That's not because we don't pay for our coffee and buy coffee out. I mean, there is this thing called Tim Hortons, and that's not the only one, but that is a big one. In fact, Tim Hortons accounts, get this, Tim Hortons accounts for 76% of all baked goods and coffee market in Canada. So if you're a Starbucks lover, you're in the minority, folks. This is the king. And in fact, Tim Hortons has almost 25% of the income from all fast foods in Canada. Amazing. So coffee for us is more than a drink. Coffee is a passion. It's a passion. But it leads to the question, what is it that we are really passionate about? What are you passionate about? Is your relationship with Jesus a passion? Is that your gotta have thing in life? Is a passion for Jesus. Because here's the thing. We get to choose whether we're in a casual or a passionate relationship with Jesus Christ. We get to choose whether it's a passionate relationship or not. We choose our level of engagement with Jesus. Some people elect not to pursue him at all. They sort of have a resistance to religion, and he's a figure that represents another religion, and they've sort of put it on the shelf and said, no, I don't want that, thanks very much, and they find him irrelevant, and they don't want him. Other people sample him, and they embrace Jesus as Savior, but you know, they hardly move beyond that point in their life. They just, you know, it's like they've secured their fire insurance and now they're good to go and don't need to take it any further. There are Christians who take a stab at radical faith, and but they never arrive at a place of really breaking through and enjoying God, embracing him and being embraced by him. And then there are those for whom their faith becomes life itself and just fills them with joy and brings them into a relationship with God through Jesus that fills their life with hope and transcends anything else that they experience. So, what makes the difference in that process? If I'm the one who gets to choose the level of my involvement with Jesus, what causes me to choose wisely? And how do I choose wisely in that process? So, this morning, I want us to take a couple of minutes to reflect on a familiar story of two probably unfamiliar characters in the Bible. Then we've had it read to us from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24. And this morning, I want you to put yourself in the story. You can choose one of those two disciples. It can be Cleopas, whom we know by name, but that's about it. Or the unnamed. So you can be the no-name brand, or you can be the Cleopas brand. But whoever you choose of those, put me in your story as the other one. Because we're beginning this journey together. And we're going to walk it together and see about inviting Jesus to be with us in that story. Along the way, we may have a drink together, a cup of coffee maybe. You know, I got to say, I'm kind of the outlier. I do drink coffee, but I drink about one, maybe two cups a day. So I'm not a big coffee drinker, but I'll have something with you. And we may have that experience along the way. But it's not about the coffee. It's about the journey. It's about the journey. And as we journey, we need to understand that we can be walking with Jesus and not even know it. See, Jesus will be present. That's a reality. Jesus will be present. What's amazing about this story, at least to me, what's amazing is not the two men trudging along to Emmaus. It's the third individual that comes along almost surreptitiously and joins these two in the process. It's the mystery of a fellow traveler who joins them. And yet in the entire trip, they never figure out who he is. Jesus, of course, he knows all things. And so he knew that the whole purpose of his coming was to die, that he was going to die. And he knew that he was going to be resurrected on the third day. And he tried to prepare his disciples and to let them know and to tell them. But, you know, they were so focused on some kind of messianic Jewish kingdom that was going to come and that he was going to lead that they just missed it. They couldn't grasp it. And so even though they'd been warned, they weren't ready. And now they were trying to figure it out. And the women had come back from the tomb and said, they said he's alive, but they're saying, that doesn't happen. Like, who's the last person come back to life that you sat down with, right? So that doesn't happen. And they're trying to figure it out. And they're confused. And we see that. In verse 14, it says, they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And even when the stranger came along, in verse 17, it says, they stood there with their faces downcast. Like, they were pretty depressed. This was not a good day. And yet Jesus was coming along and was going to make a profound difference in their roughly 12-kilometer walk. But they were so focused on their loss that they didn't recognize him. Notice what it says about their loss. As they talked and discussed these things in verse 15 with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. You see, the pain they felt was so intense that they couldn't even recognize the person that they most wanted to see. Grief clouded their vision. And they may have been literally and physically walking from Emmaus, from Jerusalem to Emmaus, and maybe they had a staff in their hand, but the virtual suitcase was there. You know, they were carrying their baggage along with them, all of their loss. Now, the reality is we all collect baggage in our journey through life. Life disappoints us sometimes. Life gives us setbacks that we move through. And these two were living in the immediacy of a crushing blow to all of their hopes and dreams. And they needed each other for consolation on the trip. And that's what friends do. Friends come along and walk with each other. They share each other's burdens. But better than the misery of two journeyers in life trying to share one another's burdens is when Jesus comes into the picture and shares the journey with them. And tragically, we can be so focused on the troubles that we miss the hope of the one who comes alongside us. We can lose sight of journey, Jesus and the journey with us. And perhaps we're just too concerned about the world we live in. These are uncertain times. After all, terrorists may come, and if they come, it will, in all likelihood, have a huge impact economically in our lives. Or maybe it's a family crisis that is consuming your thoughts and where you're living day by day. Maybe some of you have concerns about New Life Community and where it's at and where it's going and whether it grows or whether it has some people who are disaffected and numbers may change. But there are problems that we carry with us, sometimes to distraction of realizing that Jesus is there. Jesus is walking with us. So I hope as we journey together that we intentionally look for the activity of God along the way and celebrate that, yeah, he is among us. We want to learn to live in his presence and notice him in our lives, in our community of faith, more and more. So for these Cleopas and his friend. Are they going to be content with just a casual passing relationship, someone that they journey with for a short period of time, or is it going to lead to another level of encounter? Because what we need to understand that it's Jesus. It's not Jesus that takes that step. It's us. We need to invite Jesus into the process. Jesus awaits our invitation to engage. Jesus doesn't force himself on us. He simply makes himself available and awaits our invitation. You know, I don't know if you know this. I grew up when Tim Horton lived. And I remember life before Tim Horton's coffee shop. So I'm a little over 30 or so. But I don't know if you know this, but Tim Horton gave his name to the business, but he didn't start the business. He was invited into the business. A guy by the name of Jim Sherrod started the business, and he decided that Tim Horton was a marquee player with the Toronto Maple Leafs at the time, and his name would be better than Jim Sherrod's name. You want to buy Jim Sherrod's coffee? I don't think so. So he invited Tim Hortons into the process. And Tim Horton, because he was an athlete, he wasn't really big on donuts. Coffee, okay, but not so much donuts. So they opened their first store selling coffee and hamburgers and hot dogs. Didn't last. No, so they switched from meat to pastry. I don't know if you can call hot dogs meat, but whatever it is. And that was it. But it only happened because someone invited Tim Hortons along. That's why we have Timbits and double doubles, you know, is because Tim was invited along. And these travelers enjoyed the companionship of a stranger to them as they walked along. And they said, you know, we'd like this to continue. Notice in verse 28 it says, or 18 rather, it says, as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further, but they urged him strongly, stay with us, because it's nearly evening and the day is almost over. So he went and he stayed with them. You know, it says, Jesus said, he made as though he was going to go on. I don't know about you, but in a similar situation, I think I'd be ready after a 12-kilometer hike to sort of have rest and embrace that. But Jesus said, I'm not so sure. But the reason was he wanted to make sure that they wanted to extend to him the invitation. A number of years ago, I flew from here to Atlanta, Georgia, and I rented a car. It was a Saturday night by the time I got in, and I was driving to Florence, South Carolina, where I was to preach the next day, and I was tired. I was tired from the travel. I was tired because it was getting dark outside as I was driving along. I was tired because I didn't know where I was going, or the roads were unfamiliar. And every time on the interchange and in the interstate as I was driving, that I saw a sign that had more than one hotel, I would get off. And I went to every hotel and I said, you got a room? And they said, no, we're booked up. Got a room? No, we're booked up. Got a room? No, we're booked up. I don't know how many places I stopped, but I tell you, I got off at 4 or 5 interchanges. And I just went. Finally, I ended up this Holiday Inn. And I said, you got a room? They said, no, we're all booked up. I said, do you have a stable? She didn't get it. She said, what? You know, but Jesus said, Jesus made as though he were going to go on because he wanted to see them invite him into the process. Because if you desire a deeper relationship with your Lord, then it's up to you to do that. No, the responsibility is on you, not on him. All of us can experience a deeper, more satisfying, more intimate relationship with Jesus. But it has to be something we choose to pursue, that we initiate. My pursuit of him is an indication of the depth of my longing for God. I long to know Christ. I desire that experience of life in his presence. I desire that for me. I desire that for you, but I can't do it for you. I desire that collectively for us as a community of faith, because we get to choose whether or not our experience with Jesus is passionate or not. And the move towards intimacy with him is our move, not his. And when we move in that direction, then a Christ encounter changes everything. A Christ encounter changes everything. You can live casually connected to Christ, but ultimately it will never satisfy, because in the depth of your being, you will always know that there's more to life, more to fulfillment, more to satisfaction, more of a great and awesome and compassionate God that you could enjoy. Says in verse 31, then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared out of their sight. Whoops. But they asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the way and opened the scriptures to us? You'd love to have been there for that conversation. I wish it had been recorded. But no sooner did they recognize Jesus than he was gone. Yet in that momentary connection, everything was different. Everything changed. Everything all of a sudden made sense. It's noteworthy that the change began when Jesus broke bread and prayed. I don't know that these disciples were part of the institution of the Lord's Supper, but they knew immediately in his breaking bread and praying that this was the one. This was their Lord. And he was alive. He was not dead. They had seen him. It changed their outlook. It changed their passion. Did not our hearts burn within us? It lit a new fire within. There was a reason for living. There was now a purpose for going on. And I love this. There was a new direction. And literally, there was a new direction. They thought the end of their journey was Emmaus, but now their end of their journey was back in Jerusalem. They started out back on the 12-kilometer hike back. You know, that's like walking from here to Science World. It's about the same distance. And have you done that recently? You know, wow. And yet they, if they came trudging down the road in desperation and disappointment, they went back full of joy, full of life, full of hope. Life for the journey. Well, we're on a journey. It's my pleasure to walk with you guys during this time, during this sabbatical for Sandeep, and a little bit of that journey is ours. But whether or not that journey has purpose and significance depends upon whether that journey brings us closer to a passion with Christ. It's not about filling some time. It's about knowing God. You know, casual Christians don't make a difference. Casual Christians don't change anything. So let's become passionate. Passionate about knowing Jesus. Casual Christian is just another name for complacency. God wants us to have a fire lit in our belly for Him. Maybe you're here and you're just sort of exploring the whole thing and you haven't connected with, you don't have any relationship with Jesus. Well, I hope a part of the process will be for you to get to know Him. Oh, He's worth knowing. He's life itself. And He's the only hope that we have in this world in which we live. But some of us need to have that fire reignited in our life to say, making Him first is what I need to do consciously, deliberately, purposefully. May we do that together so that we know Him in this time together.